Welcome to Unframed, the podcast which hosts talks and conversations about South African art and artists. I am your host, Anthea Pockroy. Welcome to episode 27 of Unframed. In this episode, I chat with Phumlani Ntuli about his artistic practice. This is the fifth episode in a series on Unframed called Artists in Isolation, which profiles South African artists during the lockdown period of the COVID-19 pandemic. We are living through unprecedented times, where we are needing to find new ways of connecting with each other and the broader arts community, of being inspired, and of creating more platforms for artists. Phumlani is a Johannesburg-based artist who holds a BTech in Visual Arts from the University of Johannesburg. In 2017, he completed a Master in Fine Arts in the public sphere in Switzerland. Ntuli's work merges the ambit of artistic research, sculpture, video installations, and performative practices concerning the tensions between documentary and the archive, fiction, and imagined narratives. Enjoy listening to my conversation with Phumlani Ntuli. Hi, Phumlani. Thank you for joining us on the show today. I'm excited to have you. Welcome.
Hi, Anthea. Thank you for the invitation. Very excited to join you for this interview as well.
So, Pums, for those listeners that do not know you, can you please introduce yourself? Who is Phumlani Ntuli?
Hi, listeners. My name is Phumlani Ntuli. I'm a visual artist working with video and performance practices. And I also do collages. Like, it's kind of like a kind of dialogue with some of my video work. I'm currently working at the Bag Factory Artist Studios at the moment. And of course, during the lockdown, I haven't been able to go to my studio. It's been kind of working at home, which has its own challenges, but kind of interesting as well.
And for those who want to see your work while we're having this discussion, where can people find you online?
My work is available on through my website, full name, like phumlanintulistudio.com. And also I have an Instagram page where I post some of my working process. I do post work on Instagram, but it's not really necessarily like, you know, the whole representation of the work. It's just probably like screenshots or these kind of things.
Yeah, it seems like you've been making specific works during the lockdown to post on Instagram. Can you tell us about those?
So, yeah, what I've been busy with, like, of late, and I've been kind of working on a series of clips. So it's kind of the work that I've been planning for quite some time, is like animated, like a series of works, which are based on my collage work. So since I've been working with video, I've been like experimenting a little bit with like stop animation, just animate my collage work. And at the same time, for me at least, there's just an experience working with video. I kind of understand the idea of stop motion and frame by frame animation, which is quite an interesting tool to use. Of course, it is flexible. It takes a little bit of time, but I guess I've been more in tune with like using like kind of different tools to speed up the process and stuff like that. Yeah.
So with these stop motion animations that you're posting on Instagram, you're using official audio from government presentations. Am I correct?
Yeah. Well, not all of them, but like I think it's just one. I haven't been making a lot. I've been making, but it's just a few kind of clips, which I use just to, you know, share with my audiences. But obviously, yes, you're right. I think one of them is an audio clip from Peggy Tele when we're speaking about the number of things which are not permitted. For example, like activities, he's basically saying that certain things are not permitted, obviously, like based on the current situation that we're in. Because, of course, it is like the animated videos kind of embody a specific character. So I felt that particular work spoke to what I was exposed to, what Peggy Tele was saying. But it's, at the same time, it's kind of a way to reflect on it as well.
So how are you doing during lockdown and during this isolated period?
Well, during the lockdown, and obviously, like, prior to the lockdown, just before it started, it was just a very hasty period where one is trying to kind of speed up the process of, like, thinking about moving maybe studio to home to have a little bit of flexibility. Because, of course, it is kind of daunting not to be able to make things when you're used to it, you know. So, yeah, for me, just prior to the lockdown, it was just, like, a period of outsourcing things that I thought I'd need for the 21 days. And obviously, the lockdown was extended. So, I mean, I ended up using most of the things that I had. Like, the idea of making these stop motions kind of came through as, like, a material. And obviously, I've been thinking about it for quite some time, but not necessarily, like, investing too much time to, like, focus on it. Yeah, this is what I've been doing at the moment. At the same time, yeah, it is quite, it's kind of difficult and a challenge to be working at home in one space. And, like, at the same time, it feels the kind of normal where I normally base my time between the studio and home.
I want to ask you about a bit about your artistic background. We met, I can't remember the year, when you,
yes.
And tell me if there's another scenario where we met, but I think we met when you came to the Semdij Studios, right? When you got a studio bursary. Was that when we met? I feel like we met before that.
We probably have been, like, kind of meeting, because I remember I used to visit, prior actually joining the Assemblage community, I used to come.
And visit Isaac and Minnie.
Yes. So it kind of felt normal.
Okay. Yeah, you did. You slotted in, like, really, really easily when you moved into the studio.
Yeah, so that's why you felt so familiar. Yes. I think that's the familiarity with a lot of people kind of started there, like visiting, checking out, like, different artists that were working there prior to me joining.
Okay. Yeah. So let's backtrack a little bit and tell me a little bit about your artistic journey and how you got to where you are today.
Yes. How I started, obviously, I did a bachelor at University of Johannesburg back in 2008. Yeah, after finishing my bachelor's, I was fortunate enough, obviously, to get to Bella Workshop, which was probably, like, one of the things that gave me, like, confidence to focus on my artistic practice, like, seriously. It was just the first opportunity that I got immediately after graduating. So I was exposed to different artists working in different contexts, Mozambique and Mauritius. A few that I'm mentioning kind of resonated a lot more with what I was exploring or thinking about.
Sorry to interrupt, but can you maybe talk about what the Tupelo workshops are and kind of how that opportunity came about? It was started by David Kulwane, is that correct? Or he was one of the founders?
Yes, the Tupelo workshops, as far as I know, of course, yes, were started by David Kulwane along with Pat Mahudra, the founders of Prepared Factory Arts Studios. And, of course, it was also born out of Cape Town as well with Great Moor Studios, where I guess there was a sense of dialogue that happened prior even. It started with the Tupelo workshop, then the Peck Factory came about later on. So, yes, the Tupelo workshop, it doesn't necessarily have a particular format as a studio of a residency, but it has a residency format as to, like, artists working in one space, exploring whatever they want to explore. So the workshop happened when I joined in 2012, happened for like 10 days, if I'm not mistaken. It was like around 10 days. So we're just working in one environment. There was no, like, isolation of each artist, you know, studios partitioned and those kind of things. So we were just, like, giving the project space at the Peck Factory to work there for our own projects. And obviously, at the same time, issues of, like, things like dialogue, you know, you speak a lot with different artists. The fact that you're not really isolated as a residency format, like, you are, or with the whole collective, you kind of bounce in each other's ideas, and you see what other people are doing. So, which is a really interesting format. I've never ever, but I guess it has a format of a workshop, but not, like, very structural, and you have to produce work within this specific period. That, like, this artist that didn't really produce anything. They were just, like, in dialogue and collaborating with other artists.
Okay. And they're artists from all over the world that join this.
Yes. There were different artists from Wales, Germany, I guess, as well, Zimbabwe, Mauritius, and yeah, South African artists, both Johannesburg and Cape Town.
So after Tupelo, I think because I didn't necessarily have a studio space, immediately after graduating, my main media was more sculpture, like I was trained as a sculptor, and I became more interested in performance practices because of the flexibility that one has, not necessarily working with like material per se, but working with the body. At the Tupelo workshop, what happened, I did a performance there with interacting with the sculptural works, which I had like fabric and all this kind of thing. So I did a performance piece, and it was kind of well received, got really interesting feedback, and through the open studio at the end of the workshop. So also like issues of documentation, of documenting and performance, and like forms of restaging it came about. So the flexibility of obviously working with the public, within the public realm, came naturally. The idea of working with tangible material, which demands a studio space, for me was more replaced with me working with the body, obviously having one or two props as part of my performances. Also, when I joined Assemblage, I don't remember which year exactly, but I think it was around 2013, or if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, when I joined the Assemblage, the community was more diverse and more interesting. At the same time, of course, the challenge of working in performance, and if you keep it on a project-to-project basis, has its own difficulties, you know. Of course, the demand of making money, and able to like sustain oneself from like selling work and those kind of things. So those are some of the challenges, but I still figured myself through sculpture because that was my main media that I was really confident in. And I remember also I took part in a sculptural commission when I was at Assemblage. It was the Netherlands Commission. I don't know if you still remember that.
No, just remind me. Sounds a little familiar.
Yeah, it was the KKW Foundation when they were partnering with Nyrox.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they needed three artists. It was Beth Armstrong, myself, and Rodden from Cape Town. Rodden Hart. So we did a sculptural commission, yeah, with the Nyrox Foundation. And at the end of the commission, it did more like a small exhibition or something like this. So yeah, I was fortunate enough to like realize a bigger project within the public space, and also like thinking about my way through sculpture.
So after Assemblage Studios, what were you up to?
Yeah, yes, after Assemblage Studios, I was also interested to study further, you know, and also to have a possibility to travel. And then I came about the MAPS program in Switzerland, I think in 2015.
Let me just tell the listeners, MAPS is a Master's in Art in the Public Sphere, right?
Yes, MAPS is a two-year program in Switzerland, working kind of more like a law residency. Of course, it is a study program within an institution. You take courses and things like this, like writing. So it figured around like the ideas of public space or forms of being public and audience engagement. When I came across it, I was very interested because these are the issues that I was going through. And at the same time, I had a desire to travel and see different contexts. So yeah, I joined the MAPS program in 2015, and then of course, yes, during the time it was just my own practice, and the school was more resourced to shape one's practices to what initially they want to do. So I focused more with performance and video somehow, and obviously still maintaining more collaborative practices with different artists. And later on, during the MAPS program, there was issues of archives that came about in the work. Since I've been working with found material, and it kind of resonated with me a little bit to kind of explore a little bit of that and to shape how issues of reenactment of the archives kind of formulate itself within the public spheres.
And were these archives specific to Europe?
No, not necessarily. So my research was based on the Marikana Archive as more a public event, if I may say. If I were to put it within the artistic context, it will mean different things. Within civil and legal spheres would mean something else. But like my interest with Marikana, because I was thinking about the public space, how the audiences engage policies and engage issues of work and labor and those kind of things. Those are also pertinent within the artistic narrative. I was really interested to figure out how the archive itself is conceived outside, you know, of the Marikana Commission. So what I did then was taking photographs and using more as a creative writing process to figure out reenacting issues within the Marikana itself.
So you studied in Switzerland until when?
So I did a two-year program. So it was 2015, late 2015, because the program started in September. I finished in 2017. So after that, I think I stayed in Europe for a few months, maybe 2 or 3 months, just to integrate yourself back. Like, it has to be more like a thought-out process, you know. And at the same time, people kind of forget you somehow, you know. It's like, who's this guy? Like, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then there's this kind of estrangement that happens where you're like, oh, I don't really know where I belong or what I'm doing with my life.
That always happens after studying.
Yeah, after studying, this is like more like one of the daunting experiences ever. So, yeah, I stayed in Europe for 3 months. I took a residency in Zurich for 1 month, and I took another residence in Italy for a month. So it was just, then another month was just me having holiday until I came back in September.
How was that experience of studying abroad and doing residencies abroad?
There's so much differences in terms of like artistic practices. It's not like kind of crediting Europe or anything. Obviously, like the same kind of issues that most artists deal with, they are dealing with, but maybe in a different way, you know. But necessarily for me was just an exposure to see different perceptions. And so, like, not that there's like so much differences with artistic practices outside of South Africa or in the African continent and in Europe per se, but artists deal with those kind of issues differently. So for me, it was just a quest and a search just to find my way around it or kind of gather knowledge positions so that I can use them back at home somehow. Yeah, so it is just that only difference. But obviously, there's so many different ways of doing things which are kind of unique here than anywhere else, you know.
Yeah, I'm curious about what maybe some of those insights are. What are the things that stick out for you as differences between the European art scene and the South African art scene?
Yeah, if I just speak a little bit about Switzerland, because this is where I spend most of my time, in between Geneva and Zurich, where I was based in Sierre, which is it's a very small town in the mountains, like in the middle of nowhere. So obviously there was literally nothing, you know.
Yeah.
Well, this is like so much happening with like art making, like there's like nothing. It was just like the school, a museum, which really is not necessarily like a big museum, a contemporary museum. So like in terms of infrastructure, there is support, you know, of like institutions, you know, mostly coming from the government or foundations and those kind of things. So how institutions work, I think, is they're kind of in tune with the political system somehow. Like there is no like difference, or the sense of hierarchy is not really felt that much. And obviously at the same time, that also encourages forms of ownership. You know, people feel like they are part of something or have an ability or possibility to contribute for something. The most thing that kind of resonated a lot with me in terms of artistic practices was more an investment with like performance. There seemed to be more performance-based opportunities than, for example, an exhibition that would have like two-dimensional work. Yeah, so
yeah.
It's more ephemeral kind of based work. Of course, that speaks to also an economic means and material means, you know,
yeah,
at the same time.
So you're saying that there's more tolerance to work that is not necessarily commercial?
Yes, yes, there is definitely not like a low tolerance for commercial work, which I mean, obviously in South Africa works differently at the same time, you know. So most of the practices are more like ephemeral or like time-based work, video, you know, as much as like some artists would get commissions, obviously, like to make video work, time-based work, whether sound piece or installation-based, you know. So there was like more of that, obviously, like also, I think it somehow opens more like a dynamic approach, and there's like so much risk-taking. It doesn't necessarily feel like it is too safe. Obviously, like that particular taste, people are more, or the audience is more critical to it, mm-hmm, the fact that they're more exposed to it.
Do you feel like maybe that is specific to being in art school, or did you see it in other parts of Europe when you were doing residencies as well?
I feel like I was exposed to it in other parts as well.
Mm-hmm.
In Italy. It's not necessarily that two-dimensional work or sculptural work wasn't there. Like, there's so much of it, but like the appreciation felt, for me at least, more with like time-based work, you know. And then most artists working around those lines, like, or technical-based, you were using technology somehow. And obviously, I think it's just also the times that, you know, most of the young artists are working in. That particular material is like, as part of their work, as opposed to using more traditional means of art making.
So, Pums, I remember when you got the opportunity to study in Switzerland, you did an incredible crowdfunding campaign, and I remember I bought one of your artworks for that crowdfunding.
Yes.
Was that how you managed to raise money to go study there, or did you get other funding opportunities?
When I was accepted for the study program, I was accepted without a scholarship when I applied in 2014. Then I reapplied again in 2015 and also applied for the International Studies Fund with the National Arts Council.
Yes.
And obviously the funds were not really enough to cover the tuition, travel arrangements, and accommodation, mm-hmm. just to live there for a year. So the crowdfunding happened in collaboration with Mbali Dlamini. There was like a kind of artist fund where she did like a fundraiser for her master's project.
Oh,
so
amazing.
Yeah, through the success of her master's crowdfunding, she came with the idea like, oh guys, let's come together and each artist contributes work and creates a silent auction, from you say like fundraising. And from there, like funds can be distributed. So she did that for her master's project. We spoke about it. Then she's like, no, like we can pursue this avenue as well for you. So yeah, I did a crowdfunding.
Indiegogo.
Yes, Indiegogo. It was quite interesting because I wasn't really exposed to like crowdfunding or, you know, these kind of opportunities. But it really helped to kind of get in touch a lot with different people who didn't necessarily know about Pumlani Duli or know what Pumlani Duli does or is about. And at the same time, it was just within also close proximities, friends and family and, you know, people like yourself and, you know, and obviously like some of the artists in the assemblage community, they contributed work. Then we did the auction. And then I produced like a series of silk screen prints, because of course you have to give people something. It's not necessarily like they give you money just, you know, for fun, you know.
Yeah.
So like for me, it was like a big part of making a fundraiser, just to give something at the same time. So of course it is just like maybe selling work, but in a different way somehow.
Yeah. And it was successful. So yeah,
it was very successful. Yes. I managed to raise a good amount of money, and with the money that I got from the National Arts Council was actually enough for me to stay there for the whole year.
I think maybe a good segue from your background into your artistic practice is I bought one of those works, and it's this.
And
yeah,
they're
this
quite amazing.
Screen. Yeah, they were beautiful. And it's basically a human form, like shoulders up, and it's kind of got a lace overlay.
Yeah.
And I'd like to talk about this lace motif that I think is very prominent in your work. It's from your early work out of university when you created these beautiful sculptures out of lace.
Mm-hmm.
And I see on your website some of your latest works from 2019, you still have the lace motif and in the form of a shield.
Yeah.
And I'm just really interested in how you've used lace, especially in relation to a strong motif like a shield. What is your thinking around this juxtaposition of material and symbol?
Yeah, I think, yes, you're definitely right. The lace, or maybe rather the because it came about like as a doily.
Okay.
The doily motif was, yeah, I think the issues of identity obviously were pertinent and predominant as well during my undergrad studies at the University of Johannesburg. And I think one of the challenges of obviously also working with the art school, I don't know if it's still encouraged as well, how does one embody a specific material? My mother used to kind of make doily-based things, like, well, she did jerseys and scarves and these kind of things. And she had, like, a lot of doilies in her house where I grew up.
well, my mother is late now, but I think also the idea came about during the time also like going through my own personal experiences to kind of shape my personal narrative around like art making. The 20s was kind of like immediate like kind of object that kind of spoke to me, and it still does even now. That probably like that's why I still kind of took a stronghold on it. Then it was also for me thinking about like the issues of domesticity, the female body figured within the male body. I was raised by a single mother as well. The doily became that material which I was trying to embody in my own personal narrative posthumously after my mother passed away. So like just to feel more connected to her somehow. Yeah, the moment it kind of speaks differently, but the narrative is kind of still the same. Where I not necessarily like use my own personal body, use other bodies as kind of point of references as well.
I was actually going to ask about the human figure that is ever present in your work, in your prints, in your drawings, in your collages, and in your performance work. I was wondering, it feels very autobiographical often. It feels like it is your own body. I mean, obviously in your performance work, it very frequently is your body that you're using.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, I think the human body, I think it's just one of the things that for me kind of is kind of difficult to like escape it all totally. I haven't been able to leave the human narrative outside of, you know, art making. And obviously, like, yes, certain materials also, or certain, like, supports kind of dictates how certain material speaks to other materials, you know. Well, which then I was more using it as a more sculptural object, but now is overlaid as a two-dimensional aspect of the work as opposed to, like, a three-dimensional project where some of the motifs, I kind of reconstruct them somehow as more like a weaving process using, like, digital tools, like maybe Photoshop or these kind of things. Where then I was working with it more like physically, you know. That's the only difference that I kind of maybe can speak to the material as I'm using it at the moment.
Can you tell me a little bit more about your interest in performance as a medium and how is it understood and received by audiences?
Yeah, I think also performance is a very difficult way one decides to preconceive a performance. One cannot necessarily like think about the audience, what their modes of perceptions, the entry points that they're exposed to. Like different performances speak differently, where at the same time, other performances within the public space has their own like tensions and like, you know, disruptions that happen. At the same time, where I'm not necessarily like pushing a lot more like within the public space anymore. Most are more like staged.
Why is that?
I don't know how it came about, but it felt the issues of engaging the public space for me was not necessarily like important anymore, where one can feel like they are, you know, deceiving the, you know, like, I don't know if I should say this, but like ways to like being deceptive, you know, like the audience cannot necessarily know if the performance is staged or if it's just impromptu, you know.
You mean in public space, like as opposed to if you bring them to like a gallery or a theater, then they know what they're signing up for?
Yes. Okay. So that, I think that's the only difference that I felt resonated. And then at the same time, I was more aware how the documentation of the performance plays a different afterlife as an artifact, you know, of a performance. So I was more interested to push that a lot more rather than issues of taking a risk with the audiences and like trying to understand or figure how audiences respond to different things, where one would maybe decide to be more provocative and those kind of things, you know. So for me, it was more pushing the ideas of documentation. Like, what does documentation do? What can that document do in its own life, you know, outside of a performance? Hence, video making happened.
Yeah. If we talk about your earlier performance work, for example, the Undundolo project, and that was quite a long-term project. I think it lasted a couple of years. And
yes,
you had the exhibition at the Goethe on Main in Johannesburg and performed at Infecting the City in Cape Town in 2014. So that project was very much about taking your form and putting it into public space and engaging with public audiences. Can you tell us a little bit about that performance project?
Yes, that performance project, I think I did mention previously that it came from the Tupelo workshop. So it kind of started very early, around 2012. I think I posted for maybe 4 years. So, for example, the experiences of staging the performance and infecting the city was more engaging with the audiences outside of me as a performer. It wasn't just myself. I asked a few friends to take part in the performance. So where we figure out kind of multiply like bodies in the public spheres.
Can you describe what an audience would see in this project? What is the performance consist of?
Nobesum Chondolo is a shack. Then the ideas of informality and being placed uninvited, unannounced within any particular situation was an important thing. It wasn't necessarily like scripted somehow, but we went through several rehearsal, you know, of engaging the costume as well, engaging the shack. So the shack is this like red costume, and it spoke to the evictions that happened in Johannesburg around like 2009 and the xenophobic attacks and these kind of things. So and also the rent ends that were predominant in Johannesburg, like with the informality of buildings being occupied and people being chased away. So it was this costume made with an umbrella. It's a costume where actually one wears it, but the figure you cannot necessarily see it. So it's just red fabric. It takes different shapes and different bodies based on, well, for example, maybe it could be the weather that blows the wind out. So it kind of moves as well. So, but obviously the body is inside this kind of a sheltered body. So the body is sheltered, but at the same time, it's not necessarily like safe. So the ideas of informality are not necessarily like safe spaces where people feel like they have a sense of ownership of the environment that they occupy. So the ability to kind of move in one particular space was more like a symbolic aspect of using the red costume and the shelter. Yeah.
Tell me a bit more about the costumes that you use in your performances and the umbrellas. And I know you've done a lot of work with packets, bags,
and
created costumes with that. Can you tell me a bit more about the objects that you use?
Well, the objects obviously have a sense of a specific kind of familiarity, but not all of them. There is a sense of familiarity or more like a sculptural approach to them. The fact that the body can withstand carrying these sculptural works. Mm. So it's more like an interactive aspect or the extension of a body as a costume. At the same time, they're kind of more installation-based. They speak as objects in themselves without like a body figuring ways to act around it at the same time. So at the same time, they really come organically. It's really soft material. It's not too hard. Like it's something that the body can carry.
Yeah.
So like the ideas of like mobility, being able to like move and shift like spaces without having too much tensions on the body and how the body can withstand objects that the body engages with. I think there's a sense of movement felt also with the city. Like one constantly sees like figures with a lot of things in their hands or in their bodies. So it really spoke to my observation as well.
I just want to go back to Unjondolo project for a second.
Mm-hmm.
There's a text written by Nkateko Baloyi in this publication that you produced.
Yes.
And he describes the project as being focused on the black experience of the townships, which is a very particularly South African experience. And I'm curious as to how you were working on this project just before you did your master's in Switzerland. And I'm curious about how it was to make work of this nature in Switzerland, how it was received, or did you change your practice according to the context? Like, tell me more about, you know, the themes that you were working with before you went there and how they maybe transformed when you were there.
I think the ways that I figured how the body interacts with the certain objects is more obviously artifacts and more sculptural works. It's something that I kind of took also with me when I was in Switzerland. But at the same time, it was also like not necessarily like bringing any material there, but like having it as an opportunity to find new material. And then most of the material came, the idea of materiality also was kind of a big question, because there was this like constant taste for dematerialization, you know, to a point of like,
yeah,
as a performer being you without anything else, you know. And obviously for me, it was a challenge because the idea of working with material already make performances more flexible and interesting in a way that one, as a body, as a performer, with the audience there, also could rely on certain materials. For example, using the voice, using voice either by song or on spoken word or reading a text. So which were quite predominant issues that I was exposed to, like the idea of using voice, the ideas of engaging with others as well, not like kind of inviting them within a performance piece, not necessarily like them being aware. I would actually maybe bring a certain, some examples. There's work that I made when I was there. It was for a performance, a festival. But of course, the space was more like site specific. What I constructed was like a more a topography of some sort, you know, where the audiences were invited to play in this kind of imaginary cityscape using bicycles in the space. So it was a very simple approach to it. And obviously the idea of simplicity spoke to the context that I was in, like using like forms of every day as part of, you know, making, as opposed to like imagining really fictional or, you know, more like imaginary scenarios. So obviously like in Switzerland, a lot of people use bicycles. And so I put on a few bicycles from friends and then we were actors in this imaginary city in an industrial building, so kind of following a specific route. And I had like a sound piece that the sound piece was a sound extracted from Johannesburg, just an ambient sound of like the public sphere. So the cars hooting, people shouting and these kind of things.
Mm. Do you think producing work in a different context, like in a different country, affects the politics of the work that you make?
Yeah, I guess, well, the politics are part of it because I guess there is like that idea of kind of making sense to the audiences, unless the audience has prior knowledge of what the artist is doing or is all about, you know, because I think most of the people there necessarily, and I think at the same time, because I was within the school environment, so the idea of exploring was immediately encouraged, you know. So I guess the idea of observing the public spheres or certain issues or the quotidian experiences that people go through on a day-to-day basis, where they would think of them in a different way and then try to dissect it or like put it in a very simplified form that it's kind of more interesting somehow. I feel like, yes, there is that aspect which is really important, but it's not like important all the time because certain performances can be like staged anywhere or be realized the same way. Being aware of the politics of space and the quotidian experiences of the audiences and what they're already exposed to. It also like speaks to like ideas of site specificity somehow. For example, the building itself was like, there was so much narrative around the building outside of anything else. So I use that as part of the research process. Okay, how do I kind of figure out around, you know, this space? So it was like an industrial building that they were using as a vegetable market. When I was thinking about Johannesburg as well, it was just like a borrowing of my own experiences outside of that context and like merging it together somehow. Yeah, the audience could relate to some part and not necessarily make sense to some part because, of course, in Switzerland is a very quiet city, I mean, quiet country as well. Like, people are very cautious of what they say. Like, you know, even like shouting in this public space can, you know, be a performance project. People look at you like crazy, like, oh, who's this person? What are they doing? You know, kind of thing. I think like the most pertinent like issues were more like everyday experiences of the people. And obviously, I also carried most experiences from Soweto, from Johannesburg, and from anywhere else in South Africa that where I've been. And then, like, I think they're part of the material or the narrative that one immediately has, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just like figuring how they kind of make sense outside of it, or just to make a dialogue in between both.
Mm. Do you feel like your work has, since you've been back since 2017 or 2018, do you feel like your work since then has kind of become a bit more contextual to South Africa again?
I think, yeah, it has been just kind of a main challenge, but I think my like final project for my master's program helped me to stay within the South African context somehow, like in ways that I was trying to reenact how the Marikana happened.
Mm-hmm.
or the afterlife of the work was, I think of it as more a performance on its own, you know, like where miners came, you know, together in the public space to like protest, where I also figure it, that situation around how other artists have used the ideas of performance or protest performance as part of material, you know. So I think using that aspect of South Africa helped me a little bit to like still find my feet here, not necessarily like forget about these kind of issues altogether.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about this final work you did for your masters about Marikana. What was the work?
It was like a live performance. It's kind of like four-channel based performance. So I took one of the transcripts from the Marikana archives just to, I think it was just like, there was just so much material. And then obviously like what kind of shocked me was like most people didn't necessarily know that there was like this public archive that has a website and, you know, there's like so many photographs, like transcripts, audio recordings and newspaper clippings. Also, Maid and Guardian did an aftermath of the Marikana where they kind of visited their families and, yeah, just to like tell what they are part of the story. And this is like the life of an event that exists outside of its own, because of course it has been like kind of long already, like since 2012, you know. So in a sense that like how materials are kind of put within the public space, within the digital spheres or digital space, like speaks to audiences, because I think that's done intentionally, you know, like how things are really constructed, the ideas of fragmentation, like specific photographs which speak to one event, but like you can't really position them in kind of one situation. I was looking at them within a more like an artistic gaze, and obviously at the same time is more like a fiction based, because the idea of an archive has also parallels of power, like who speaks for who as well.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Is this algorithmic memory? Was that?
Yes.
Okay, so I was going to ask you, I mean, this image is on your website and it looks really like a beautiful installation.
Mm-hmm.
So there's four-channel video.
Video, yeah.
And then you're doing a live performance kind of next to it.
Yeah, so it's a four-channel video projection, and then the text is one of, it's not really immediate in my mind, but it's from one of the protesters or like that was taken. So the figure is kind of reciting or like telling what happened from like day one. Yeah, what I did was I took the transcript, I was reading it, but not necessarily like all of it. So for example, in a sentence, let's say, what can I say? in a sentence, my name is Pumani Ndulu. I would say my name, Nduli, that kind of thing. So just to play with the ideas of constructing a narrative in a way that like it's broken down, because it was speaking around ideas of fragmentation, how a narrative or the story is like fragmented. So yeah.
In my research on you, I came across a really beautiful video on the Bag Factory website on your profile page called Tied Rope.
Yes.
I couldn't see which year it was. What year did you make that?
It was 2018. Yes, okay. 2018.
So it's a black and white film, and it seems to tell the narrative of Joburg and Bag Factory and Tupelo and David Kowane. And just tell me a little bit more about this, and you need to put it on your website as well, please.
Tide Rope was a video project. It was commissioned by the PPC. Yeah, it won the PPC awards in 2018. I think it was for the 2019. Like it was for It was for last year's awards, but the earlier ones. But it was done in 2018. So obviously, with my interest in video, I proposed to the PPC, and then they were excited about the project, so they gave me money to produce it.
Amazing.
Yeah, so it speaks to it's an essay film, and at the same time, it is kind of different with maybe some of my work, because it's more like done with the specific aesthetic to it. Well, it's an essay film formats where it's not necessarily like what the interviewees say, but like more about the sequence of each image, like how images follow one another somehow. So it follows David Kolwane and Pat Mawutla within the Bag Factory. It was more like an architectural environment, and how
it kind of has a specific voice. And what was interesting about the Back Factory for me was the kind of, I mean, the texture of the building has this kind of like, it had so many textures to it, like, you know, the ceiling is kind of falling apart and this kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so I use those as part of like, kind of gestures in the film. So yeah, it's speaking to, back to what David Golani and Pat Mahotra are saying at the same time, also having a sequence on its own.
Yeah.
So yeah, I collaborated with quite a lot of people as well in that one.
It must have been just before David Golani passed away. So you're very lucky to have had that time with him.
Yeah. Yes, we also been speaking. We spoke a lot about it because I initially wanted to do it, but the fact that like also PPC was there and then there was like a budget to do it, like I was like, oh, cool, like it kind of works. There was a specific quality to like how I wanted to produce it. Yes, it was quite fortunate that I worked with like David Golani when he was still alive. And at the same time, when I came to the Back Factory, I was more pushing to kind of, because he was also doing like stop animations as well. Like he had like a series of stop motions.
David.
So I wanted, yes, he has.
Really?
Yeah, I think he did like two or so. Like there was one at the exhibition at Standard Bank. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, so I wanted to work, I was more keen to collaborate with him to do like a stop motion video or something. But yeah. That's what we
mentioned. And did you?
No, it didn't happen.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Are you influenced by any South African performance artists? or international? Yeah, you can go straight to international if you like.
My main influences is John Akomfra. He's a British-based filmmaker. He's a filmmaker. He's been making films with the Black Film and Audio Collective. Kodo Eshun works with like film, although like their work also is more performance based, but how they kind of figure themselves within performances has to do more with like text, you know, text based work. It's more like writing somehow, you know, and then they like read them out and maybe make a video of it at the same time. So this German artist, Hito Stiles, she's a German theorist, but she's an artist as well, working across film and performance. And then my main kind of influences in South Africa is Tracy Rhodes. I love Tracy Rhodes' work. And then since I graduated, I've been like really, I think I took it as like a stepping stone to like figure out myself around like performance-based work and video, because she also works with video and photography as well.
Yeah. What have been your greatest challenges as an emerging artist?
I think the challenges, especially like working in South Africa, the kind of also taste as well of the South African like art making practices are more within like, well, not necessarily commercial based art making, but like, you know, two dimensional kind of approaches to work, where time based and performance based work had its own I feel like it had a prime somehow, but like somehow it slowly died down, and then, you know, people are coming back to it again, you know, but it's like that push and pull which hasn't really been able to like sustain itself widely. We don't necessarily have a lot of like festivals maybe dedicated to time based and performance based work. There is a few, but it's not quite a lot.
What has been a big moment for you in your young art career? What is your proudest achievement to date?
Yes, like the fact that I managed to like go to Switzerland in 2015, where it was just an idea. At some point it was just an idea. And the fact that it eventually happened was like one of the biggest experiences ever. I think it unleashed fear or like ideas of being unsure or being uncertain, you know, like anything that one really thinks about, like it's possible. This is, of course, it is also dictated by maybe issues of support, you know, who has your backing and those kind of things. And the fact that like, if you need something, it's equally important to like tell people what you need, like, you know, and then if there is a possibility to make it happen, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So yeah, going to Switzerland for me, and when I was there, having the time to like travel to different countries and like experience different like cultures, was one of my highlights. The fact that I was able to see myself outside of the enclave of South African art making and like, you know, put myself out of that situation was one of the key moments, you know.
And in 2019, you were included on the Congo Biennale?
Oh, yeah. Last year, I took part in the Congo Biennale. It was the first iteration of the Congo Biennale. It happened in September with a residency, a one-month residency. We had a show in October. And then the first one was the Young Congo, was more Kinshasa-based young artist who are working at King Art Studio. It's one of the producers of the Congo Biennale.
So finally, Pums, what are you working on now, and how do you think the coronavirus will impact the way you make art going forward?
Yeah, it's been kind of difficult to outsource some material that I kind of work with in the studio, more like paper and canvas, which I use for my collage work. At the same time, I think during this lockdown, what really helped me to pause a little bit from not necessarily like overproducing, but like rethinking of work that I've done already, was figuring out how to conceive a more like motion based, like stop motions for my work. Because I think like video really speaks a lot to it. I think it's just one of my like main interest. I feel like it's also difficult to escape it because I want to see things moving, or, you know, I think that the influence comes from working with performance. I want to see things moving than being static. So it's just taking the static work and then making video animated stop motion works with those. So this is what I've been doing at the moment. Also, like, yeah, maybe applying for residencies.
Pumlani, thank you so much, and it was lovely chatting to you and hearing about everything, because I haven't really even heard about your Switzerland experience, so that was...
Oh, yeah,
we haven't actually sat down and spoken.
So it was, yeah, just good moments to do that, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you for being on the show, and I look forward to seeing what you get up to in the next year.
All right, cool. Thank you very much for inviting me. Later.
Okay, cool. Bye, Pums. Keep well. Ciao. Thank you so much to Pumlani and to you, the listeners, for joining me today. Please follow Unframed on Facebook and Instagram and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Please rate and review us, as it will help us to get more followers. Also, share this episode with your networks and encourage them to follow Unframed too. Thank you. See you next time. Bye.
Then I later on, I think I took the same project like a year after for the Goten, the God Institute, when they had the GPS at the main, at the main. I think, yeah, that was like my way to kind of like see how a performance piece can be like a project. And obviously that came about interacting with different artists, giving me insights of, okay, this is what you can do. You can document this and show it as a video piece. You can restage the performance in different contexts with festivals and such and things like this. So, yeah, doing the Goten Main project, I think I explored that more in depth, looking at the documentation of the performance and making video, mainly for showing it as a video, but recording the performance. The same project that I took it to also, in fact, in the city, did a little small publication. And obviously that demand also came to collaborate with different artists. So the fact that now, I couldn't necessarily put it together by myself. So a few friends that were available during the time, Kateko, Valoy, and Bule Mahopa, formed some working group. We didn't necessarily have like a name for it, but we just like working together because we resonated with what everybody was doing.